and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, July 31st, 2020. Some South Sudanese in the diaspora have formed a new group to advocate for change in their country.
But we have committees inside the country. We have people in Juba, we have in neighboring countries, we have in all the town in South Sudan. We are not far away. We are there with them.
And civilians are displaced in Lobonok village in central Equatoria State.
The situation is alarming. the current situation because of this corona, where people's movement is difficult, food security worsened. So the problem, the first thing is now the issue of food and again the shelter.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A group of South Sudanese in the diaspora have formed a new group to advocate for change in South Sudan. The group's spokesperson says the United Citizens for Change is modeled after Sudanese peaceful revolution that toppled former President Omar al-Bashir. John Kurkwat Mayol says South Sudan is going through what he called mismanagement, corruption, and lack of basic services. He says his group wants change through peaceful means.
We are called United Citizen for Change. We are a South Sudanese citizen who is concise, is awakened by the status quo in our country. We come from different part of South Sudan and we are united for change. We are not yet a political party.
Jonkur, this is not the first time I'm speaking to people like you in the diaspora who are hiding behind their keyboards, sending messages, but in actual sense, they don't have followers. They're just making empty promises for the people of South Sudan. Why should people trust you or believe what you're saying?
We are not just making empty promises. John, I live in the United States of America. I have a job. My kids go to school. I am okay. But I'm not selfish. And that's why I'm here to call for this change, for the better of our people back home.
Yeah, how would you react to someone who would ask you, how are you going to bring change? You're thousands of miles away.
But we have committees inside the country. We have people in Juba. We have in neighboring countries. We have in all the town in South Sudan. We are not far away. We are there with them.
When I was reading your statement, you said you want to model your call for change on the experience in Sudan. The Sudanese, when they were planning for their revolution, they were not hiding behind keyboards. They were on the streets. They were not secretive.
Again, John, we are not secretive. Sudanese revolution, it was engineered by people also in diaspora. They collected money. They made a contribution. As I mentioned to you before, we have committees within the country, and we are here together to support. And I'll be there in the country too. This is not going to be like what the regime call Facebook politician or keyboard warriors.
But people in Juba would also say that some of you who are in the diaspora make noise so that they are given positions in the government. And there are so many of you in the diaspora who have been sitting on the fence, and right now there are governors, there are ministers in the government, and they are quiet. They no longer talk like they were talking from the diaspora. How do you react to that?
Listen, I'm not looking for any position, neither anyone from this, you know, United Citizen for Change is looking for a position. What we are looking to is to restore the dream of people of South Sudan with the justice, liberty, and prosperity that people of South Sudan have been fighting for nearly 22 years.
Talk to me a little bit about United Citizens for Change.
Wolatak is a technical chairperson for this United Citizen for Change. We have so many members, but we are not going to disclose anyone at this critical moment.
And you are speaking as who in this group?
I am a spokesperson of this United Citizen for Change.
And where is your headquarters?
John, we are all across the country. We are in Juba, we are in Malakal, we are in Awil, we are in Torit, we are in Bor, we are in Yambio.
How would you react to somebody who would say your lack of transparency builds big cloud on your head?
We are not lacking transparency, John. This is the beginning. And as I said, we progress and public will know. we are inclusive and we are diverse.
Junkur is the spokesperson and Wolotak is the head of the technical committee. Two people from the same community. Would you call that diversity?
Well, yeah. Well, we are not only two from one community. As I said, we are diverse.
You said you are the spokesperson and your colleague Wolotak is the technical chairperson. For now, the face of your group is these two people who are all from one community, and you are here preaching about diversity.
We are. You will see different names very soon. You know, you will see a Galwag or Wani or Deng or Morobe, etc. But it doesn't mean that if Wolotak is a technical chairperson, that means we are all from one ethnic group. That's not diverse.
That's Junkur Kodmayol, the spokesperson of the United Citizens for Change, a new group formed by some South Sudanese in the diaspora. He was speaking with me last night from Utah here in the United States. Hundreds of civilians are displaced from their homes at Lobonok Payam in central Equatorial State during fighting between government forces and rebels in the area. Eyewitnesses accuse government forces of killing, raping women and girls, and looting property in the village. The South Sudan People's Defense Forces spokesperson, General Lul Roy Kwong, denies any knowledge of the abuses, but admits the SSPDF clashed with the rebels of the National Salvation Front 10 days ago at Lobonok. The displaced families are now in Kit Boma seeking refuge, and the chief of the area says he has no food for the internal displaced persons. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
Chief Silva Kerry says the IDPs were displaced after government forces attacked several local villages last week while trying to root out NAS forces allegedly operating in the area.
They entered deep into the mining place where they got those people who were mining. Then those people were just disorganized from the mining place. The others ran here to Kitfo. Then others went up to the Lobonok area in Yapa.
Chief Kerry says about 100 families are now in Kit Boma seeking refuge. He says some of the displaced remained in Karpeta while others fled to Kitwan Boma. He says the IDPs have not received any humanitarian assistance.
The situation is alarming. You know, the current situation because of this corona, where people's movement is difficult, food security worsened. So the problem, the first thing is now the issue of food and again the shelter.
60-year-old Sederina Lipo, who fled into the bush from her home in Karpeta village of Lobonok Payam, says government forces raped local women and girls.
Those people rape women and young girls. Even some of us who are elderly are raped, including women who have given birth. They have done bad things, really. Our properties have been looted. Our children have suffered. Some are shot and others are slaughtered even.
Lipo was speaking to us from Kit Boma, where she hopes to find food and shelter. IDP Robert Modi Lewis, speaking by phone from Kit Boma, says the SSPDF also attacked villagers who were mining gold. He says the army forces held villagers at gunpoint, demanding to know where the rebels were hiding.
The soldiers did bad things to civilians here. They took our things, goats, even food. They beat people. If they find you walking along the road, they will put you on gunpoint to tell them where the rebels are. But I told them that there are no rebels near us in this area. When we saw that, we were suffering so much, we ran away to Nyarbang.
Luis says soldiers even burnt down the temporary shelters of the displaced. Army spokesperson Lulu Roy Kwang confirms the SSPDF clashed with NAS forces in Lobonok last week, but denies soldiers raped women or committed any other atrocities against civilians.
We do not accept any responsibility in the first place because where the reported looting were committed, beating and harassment of civilians, they were committed in areas without the presence of SSPDF forces. We do not have presence at Karpeta, Nyarbang and Pai Hills. We only carried out limited operations against us at Pai Hills because they have been mining gold at Pai Hills, and they would smuggle it across the country, across the borders, to buy firearms for them to continue with their offensive operations against the government.
Sultan Silver Kerry of Kit Boma says when government forces and rebels clash in civilian area, it becomes nearly impossible for local leaders to remain neutral.
That's why we who are the chiefs are now compelled into problems. Whenever it comes a rebel, they can blame you that you are liaising with the government. And here on the other side also, when the government comes, say, oh, you are accommodating rebels. So that is a very difficult situation for us, the chiefs.
VOA could not verify the exact number of displaced citizens in and around the villages of Lobonok where last week's fighting took place. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
Kenya's Ministry of Interior has ordered Inspector General of Police to disarm members of the Nairobi County government following strange of physical fights between lawmakers, some of whom are licensed gun owners. Maureen Ojiambo reports for VOA from Nairobi.
Chaos has engulfed Nairobi's county government in recent days. City lawmakers have thrown both punches and chairs during the heated debates over a motion to oust the Speaker of the county's legislature. On Wednesday, Kenya's Interior Cabinet Secretary Fred Matiang'i ordered the disarmament of Nairobi County lawmakers, some of whom carry guns. Though no one has fired their weapons in the assembly, Matiang'i says that in the heated debates, armed lawmakers may harm each other.
And I've asked the Inspector General of Police today with the regional security team in Nairobi to disarm everyone around that county assembly. Anyone who holds firearms, there could be people. We already collected 14 guns. I suspect there could probably be more firearms. And let them tell the Firearm Licensing and Control Board to cancel all the licenses. We withdraw those firearms from them.
Police officers stormed the Nairobi County Assembly earlier this week to restore order. Matiang'i says a large number of security forces in Nairobi's central business district are deployed around the county assembly premises due to chaos.
Our security deployment around the CBD in Nairobi, 25 to 30% of it is around the county assembly of Nairobi. And most of that is because of what happens around there is just pure criminality. And we cannot go on this way. There are decisions that need to be made.
But some lawmakers in Kenya's capital say police are to blame for violence too. Earlier this week, a video emerged showing officers assaulting Nairobi lawmaker Patricia Mudheu on the county assembly premises after a chaotic session. Speaking after the incident, Ms. Mudheu said that she was feeling unwell when the police gained entry and dispersed them.
Police actually gained entry. As I was seated in our lounge, there were some tear gas and people came running towards my side, and since I couldn't run because I'm unwell, I just decided to sit. Immediately, police approached and, you know, they were telling us to get out. But to my shock, one police hit me, I have some marks, and he couldn't stop. There were four of them. And despite me like lying down, they didn't stop. They continued beating me. I was unarmed in my place of work.
The Federation for Women Lawyers in Kenya has called for action to be taken on police officers that were captured on camera brutalizing Mudheu. Nancy Kielu, the Federation chairperson, said that there are increased cases of use of excessive force by police on unarmed civilians.
What we witnessed were actions against women who are carrying out lawful duties at their place of work. This cannot go unaccounted for. We shall therefore be commencing specific legal procedures to ensure that we safeguard women's spaces of work without fear of intimidation.
On Wednesday, Kenya's Director of Criminal Investigation ordered the police accused of assaulting Mudheu to be interdicted after investigations. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Sudanese authorities report reduction in COVID-19 cases. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? people speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your golden rule in life?
My golden rule is never to give up, no matter what, whether it's on family challenges, money problems, work related, I just never give up.
Golden rule. No, I don't allow men to play with my life. That is my golden rule. And I don't allow anyone to talk ill about my parents and my family.
Put God first, because in everything you need God. And as you know, the fearing of God is the beginning of knowledge.
Not to lie, I always want to base my living, everything I do, my speaking, my saying, in facts and truth.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linar Mudu. The World Health Organization and the Africa Centers for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
We move to Kenya, where wildlife officials are praising Kenya for arresting alleged wildlife trafficker Abubakar Mansour Mohammed Surur, who is also wanted in the United States. Surur is accused of trafficking ivory and rhino horn, as well as conspiracy to launder money and distribute heroin. Experts say the East Africa region has become a hub for illegal trade. For VOA News, Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
With the help of U.S. officials, Kenyan authorities arrested Wednesday the alleged wildlife trafficker in the coastal city of Mombasa. Philip Murudi is a vice president of Species Conservation and Science at the Africa Wildlife Foundation, and he welcomed the arrest of Surur.
By catching a kingpin, you can actually disrupt the illegal wildlife trade. If it's a dangerous individual who has funding and who is involved in multiple illegalities, and those are the people, the kingpins that you really want to catch. One of the weaknesses of fighting the illegal wildlife trade is that we don't get to the kingpins. A lot of the arrests are of the smaller guys.
Surur is charged with conspiracy to traffic 190 kilograms of rhino horns and 10 tons of ivory worth more than $7 million. The Kenyan national also is accused of money laundering and distribution of heroin. Investigators believe Surur is a member of the Koroma Network, a smuggling organization that trades in drug and illegal wildlife products. The network shipped its goods out of ports in Pemba, Mozambique, Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and Mombasa. Last year, authorities in Uganda arrested the head of the network, Liberian national Moazo Koroma. In 2017, Kenyan police arrested two other key figures, brothers Ibrahim Akasha and Baktash Akasha. The brothers were extradited to the US, where they are now serving long-term jail sentences. Alastair Nelson works with the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime, a network of 500 experts in the field of human rights, democracy, governance, and development issues. Speaking Wednesday at an online discussion, Nelson said such high-profile arrests have been made possible by authorities from different countries working together.
One of the reasons that we saw this law enforcement success is that we had long-term investigations by groups that were mandated to work across different countries and work with different local law enforcement authorities. So that was the USDA with the Akashas, it was US Fish and Wildlife with the Chroma case, and the China Anti-Smuggling Bureau. And they used traditional long-term investigation methods. So they used a lot of human intelligence. They got close to the organized crime groups. But key is that they had to work very, very closely in partnership with trusted national law enforcement authorities.
Corruption and political connections often are blamed for the failure of some African countries to arrest and prosecute high-level figures in the illegal drug and wildlife trades. Now, the global effort to save Africa's wild animals is yielding fruit. The Africa Wildlife Foundation shows elephant and rhino populations are on the rise in some parts of the continent. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Muslims in Sudan are celebrating Eid al-Adha holiday today amid the corona outbreak. The festivities aren't the same as in the other years. Sudanese officials are calling on citizens to continue observing precautionary public health measures to avoid new infections during the celebrations. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Hundreds of heads of sheep could be seen along main roads leading in and out of Sudan's capital Khartoum Thursday as family prepared for the Eid of Al-Adha feast. The feast in which Muslim families traditionally slaughter a sheep for a festive family meal marks the end of the annual Muslim pilgrimage to Mecca. 43-year-old Umm Muhammad Jabir, her face covered by a traditional cloth, accompanies her husband at one of the livestock markets along Jebel Awliya Road in Khartoum's Kalakla neighborhood. They are looking to buy a sheep for their family of five. Jabir says, this year it is difficult to celebrate Eid with an extended family due to COVID-19 travel restrictions.
Before, we used to go and visit some of our families or we go for outing. But now, we can't do that anymore. My small family members are aware about the ongoing coronavirus and all of us are strictly following the precautionary measures. We avoid all social gatherings by all means. So this time, we shall celebrate it alone as the small family.
35-year-old Murtada Khidir is one of the livestock vendors. He wears a brown locally made face mask and says livestock vendors try to follow all health directives to avoid getting infected. Khidir says even though the pandemic has affected their business, they are still happy that families are able to afford to buy sheep.
We maintain social distancing and most of our customers have their sanitizers in their cars, but they will wear face masks, including children, all the time. And thanks God, up to now we have not experienced any positive case among our people here in the market.
Sudanese officials are urging the public to take precautions against COVID-19 during the Eid holiday. Suleiman Muhammad Bashar is an official at the Sudan's Ministry of Religious Affairs. He has directed imams and their congregations to take precautions during the Eid prayers and celebrations.
All imams should shorten the duration of the prayer by choosing short verses from the Holy Quran. They should also shorten the homily to shortest time possible. All congregations should be wearing masks or use their religious scarf if they can't afford providing masks. All should carry along with them the prayer mat.
On Wednesday, Professor Sadiq Taur, who heads the Sudanese Government Committee Against COVID-19, tells press that 14 of Sudan's 18 states have not recorded new infections in the last 2 weeks. He says that is an encouraging sign and applauded citizens for following health directives. But he urges people to remain vigilant against the disease during the Eid festivity.
The committee therefore urges all to maintain their precautionary measures for the next 3 weeks to ensure that we are safe and to avoid any other new infections of the pandemic. We also here notifying all travelers who might be coming to the country that they should undertake a test from a recognized laboratory through our embassies in the respective countries.
Since February, Sudan has recorded more than 11,000 COVID-19 cases. Over 700 people have died. For VOA News, I am Michael Atid in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Hundreds of civilians were displaced in Lobanikpayam in central Equatoria state last week after fighting broke out between government forces and rebels. Eyewitnesses accused government forces of killing civilians, raping women and girls, and looting property. Army spokesman Luol Roy Kwong admits that army forces clashed with the National Salvation Front rebels in Lobanik, but denies soldiers committed any atrocities against civilians. Local Chief Silver Carey says civilians were displaced after government forces attacked the local villages while trying to root out NAS forces that were allegedly operating in the area. He says about 100 families are now in Kitboma seeking refuge, and he calls the situation alarming. He says they have no food or shelter. A group of South Sudanese in the diaspora have formed a group to advocate for change in South Sudan. The group spokesman says the group, called United Citizens for Change, is modeled after the revolution in Sudan, which led to the Sudanese military ousting former President Omar al-Bashir from power. Jankour Kouat Mayal says South Sudan is experiencing widespread mismanagement, corruption, and a lack of basic services. He says his group wants to effect change through peaceful means in South Sudan. And finally, Sudanese health officials say 14 out of 18 states have recorded zero infections of the coronavirus within the past 2 weeks. Health officials attribute the progress to cooperation of citizens following health directives, including social distancing. As Muslims take part in the annual Hajj pilgrimage, Sudanese officials have urged citizens to continue observing protective measures to avoid new infections during the celebration. The Eid marks the end of the annual Muslim pilgrimage to Mecca. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Dola Jadid by Silver X.
I know what to do. Be Dola Jadid. I know what to do. Be Saudan Sudan. I know what to do. Be Dola Jadid. The king of Lokri with I and I will test the dunia. Silver X.
Come on. Adela, selector number one. Kiss record.
The Azai Bidaya, the Dola Jedi. The Dola Sudan. The Azai Bidaya, the Dola Jedi. The Dola Sudan. The Dola Jedi. 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 The Dola Jedi.
That's can be goal of South Sudanese. For better than it, we don't love at all. The kid has a bigger money in a debit. The world really alarm, but no le alarm. Publicly, officially, historically, calling money in a color. We don't love Jedi. We let do Jedi. We saw not Jedi. For like a Jedi. We'll be holiday. Yeah, yeah, yeah. South Sudan, they be got out of Jedi.
We've been listening to Silver X with the song Dola Jadid. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for making us part of your evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Dom Janina Waki, South Sudanese. Kelina Ibu Nupusa Nina Junupit. Yeah, let me just say,
they have saved me, Diana.